Remember my party. Remember my party, said Peter Walsh as he stepped down the street, speaking to himself in time with the echo of Big Ben. It was still early, only 11:30. Oh, Clarissa's parties, he thought. Why does she give these parties? Not that he blamed her. Only one person in the world could be as he was. In love. And there he was, this fortunate man, reflected in a shop window, all India behind him, really in love for the first time in his life. Clarissa had grown hard, he thought, and a little sentimental. The way she said, "Here is my Elizabeth," annoyed him. Why not just, "Here's Elizabeth"? It was insincere. And Elizabeth didn't like it either, for he understood young people. He liked them. There was always something cold in Clarissa, he thought. She had always had, even as a girl, a kind of shyness, which in middle age becomes ordinariness, and then it's all over, he thought. Had he annoyed her by visiting at that time, he wondered. Then he felt suddenly embarrassed at having been such a fool, crying, telling her everything, as usual. As a cloud crosses the sun, silence falls on London and falls on the mind. There we stop. There we stand. It is only habit that keeps us going, Peter Walsh said to himself, pausing, feeling empty inside. He stood there thinking, Clarissa refused me. The bells of St. Margaret's Church rang out 2 minutes late, as usual. Clarissa has been ill, he thought. It was her heart, he remembered. And as the final bell suddenly rang out, loud and solemn, for death that surprised in the middle of life, he thought of Clarissa falling where she stood. No, no, he cried. She is not dead. I am not old, he cried, marching up Whitehall, as if his future stretched before him there, forceful, unending. He was not old, or fixed, or dried up in the least. He did not care a bit what the Dalloways and the Whitbreads and their sort of people said about him. True, he had not finished his studies at Oxford University. He had rejected their kind of politics. He had failed in some ways. But the future lies in the hands of young men like himself, as he had been 30 years ago, with the love of ideas, always reading, reading science, reading philosophy. A noise came from behind, a regular thudding sound. Boys in uniform, carrying guns, marched with their eyes ahead of them, their arms stiff, on their solemn progress away from the cenotaph. They reached him, marched on past him to Trafalgar Square and disappeared. Nobody yet knew he was in London, except Clarissa. And the strangeness of standing alone, alive, unknown, at 11:30 in Trafalgar Square flooded over him. His mind emptied, and he felt a sudden, powerful joy. He had escaped. He was completely free. I haven't felt so young for years, thought Peter, feeling like a child who runs outdoors. A young woman in a long cloak came walking across Trafalgar Square. She's extraordinarily beautiful, Peter thought, starting to follow her. Even with her back turned, she seemed to choose him. You, she said, with her white gloves and her long, thin cloak, which blew out a little in the wind, like open arms that would offer comfort. She waited at the edge of the pavement. She was not rich like Clarissa, but there was a dignity about her. She crossed the road. He followed. The last thing he wanted was to make her embarrassed. But if she stopped, he would say, Come and have an ice cream, and she would answer simply, "Oh, yes." Other people came between them. He kept following. He was a wild, romantic adventurer. On and on she went, across Piccadilly Circus, up Regent Street, across Oxford Street, turning down one of the little side streets. Finally, she stopped at a house, opened her bag, and with one look in his direction, but not at him, put her key in the door and was gone. It was over. "Well, I've had my fun," he thought. It was over, and half imagined, as he knew very well. He had invented it, invented her, as one invents most of life, he thought. Clarissa's voice sang in his ears. "Remember my party! Remember my party!" He turned and went up the street, thinking he would find somewhere to sit till it was time for the lawyers. Where should he go? It didn't matter, he thought, for it was still very early. Up the street then, towards Regent's Park. It was a splendid morning too, and London was a splendid achievement in its way. The doctors, office workers, and purposeful women, all going about their business, seemed to him wholly admirable and good. He had walked in Regent's Park as a child. It is odd, he thought, how the past keeps coming back to me. The result of seeing Clarissa, perhaps. For women live much more in the past than we do, he thought, and attach themselves to places. Here he was in Regent's Park. And yes, he remembered it. He would find an empty seat in the shade and smoke. He did not want to be disturbed by people asking him the time. There was a long seat with an old grey-haired nanny and a baby asleep in a pram beside her. He would sit at the far end of that seat. "She's an odd-looking girl," he thought, suddenly remembering Elizabeth coming into the room and standing by her mother. "She's quite grown up now, no more than 18, and handsome rather than pretty. She probably doesn't get on with Clarissa. I shall try and speak with Elizabeth alone tonight," he thought. He watched the smoke from his cigarette slowly making odd shapes in the air and gradually fading away. Suddenly, he closed his eyes, raised his hand with great effort, and threw away the heavy end of his cigarette. His mind emptied, shutting out the children's voices, people passing, rising and falling traffic. Down, down he fell into sleep, while beside him on the hot seat, the old nanny watched over the baby sleeping in its pram, and the baby's little sister playing on the grass. Peter Walsh woke suddenly. "Good heavens!" he said to himself out loud. He had been dreaming of some scene, some room, some past, which gradually became clearer. It was at Boughton that summer, when he was so much in love with Clarissa. There were a lot of people there, sitting round a table, talking and laughing. He remembered Sally Seton, Clarissa's dearest friend, who was always at Boughton. He gave Sally cigarettes, which she smoked in her bedroom, and Clarissa's father disliked them both equally, which made them great friends. He remembered a terrible quarrel with Clarissa about a neighbour who had married a woman who had once been his servant. "Did they know that the wife had had a baby before they were married?" Sally Seton said. Clarissa had been greatly offended. She would never speak to the woman again. Peter did not blame her for minding. Girls brought up in the way she had been knew nothing. It was her manner that annoyed him. Hard, cold, superior. She knew that he criticised her, even without speaking. She got up and went off alone. As soon as she shut the door, he felt deeply unhappy. It all seemed useless. Going on being in love, going on quarrelling, going on forgiving each other and being friends again. It was an awful evening, and he couldn't speak to her about it. There were always people about, and she carried on as if nothing had happened. That was the worst part of her, this coldness, this woodenness, which he had felt again this morning. Yet heaven knows he loved her. He had gone into dinner late and sat down by Aunt Helena, old Miss Parry, a fierce old lady, but who was kind to him. And then, halfway through dinner, he made himself look across at Clarissa for the first time. She was talking to a young man on her right, and he suddenly said to himself, "She will marry that man." He didn't even know the man's name. For it was that afternoon, of course, that Richard Dalloway had come to Boughton. Later, Clarissa had come up to him, with her perfect manners, and spoken to him as if they had never met before, which made him angry. "The perfect hostess," he said to her, and saw how it hurt her. But he meant to hurt her after seeing her with Dalloway. Then she left him, and he had a feeling that they were all gathered together against him, laughing and talking behind his back. He stood by Aunt Helena, talking about wild flowers. Never had he suffered so much. People began going out of the room. He had them talking about fetching cloaks, because it was cold on the water. They were going boating on the lake by moonlight, one of Sally's mad ideas. And they all went out. He was left quite alone.
"Don't you want to go with them?" said Aunt Helena. She had guessed.
And he turned round, and there was Clarissa again. She had come back to fetch him. He was overcome by her goodness.
"Come along," Clarissa said. "They're waiting."
They walked down to the lake. He had never felt so happy in the whole of his life. Without even speaking, they were friends again. He had 20 minutes of perfect happiness. And all the time he knew perfectly well that Dalloway was falling in love with her, that she was falling in love with Dalloway. But it didn't seem to matter. Nothing mattered. They sat on the ground and talked. They went in and out of each other's minds without any effort. And then, in a second, it was over. He said to himself as they were getting into the boat, "She will marry that man." He knew that he was foolish. He asked impossible things of Clarissa. He made terrible scenes. She would have accepted him, perhaps, if he had been less foolish. Sally thought so. It was an extraordinary summer. The awkward conversations with Clarissa's father, Justin Parry, at breakfast, Aunt Helena being fierce but kind, Sally taking him off for talks in the vegetable garden, Clarissa in bed with headaches. The final terrible scene, which he believed mattered more than anything in the whole of his life, happened at 3 o'clock in the afternoon of a very hot day. It had started at lunch, when Sally made a silly joke about Dalloway, and Clarissa was suddenly annoyed. And that was all. But it was exactly as if she had said to him, "I'm only amusing myself with you. I have an understanding with Richard Dalloway." He had not slept for nights. "It's got to be finished, one way or the other," he said to himself. He sent a note to Clarissa by Sally, asking her to meet him by the fountain at 3. "Something very important has happened," he wrote at the end of it. She came early, and they stood with the fountain between them. She did not move. "Tell me the truth," he kept on saying. He felt as if his head would explode. She seemed turned to stone.
Tell me the truth, he repeated. She was like iron, like hard stone. And when she said,
This is the end,
after he had spoken for a long while, with tears running down his cheeks, it was as if she had hit him. She turned. She left him. She went away.
Clarissa! He cried. Clarissa!
But she never came back. It was over. He went away that night and never returned.
It was awful, he cried. Awful, awful!
Still, the sun was hot. Still, one got over things. Still, life had a way of adding day to day, he thought, yawning and beginning to take notice of Regent's Park in the sunshine. The little girl, who had been showing pretty stones to her old nanny at the other end of the seat, ran off straight into a lady's legs. Peter Walsh laughed out loud.